So right now, people all around the world are moving into cities at really fast rates. And one of the biggest migrations in human history is happening now, and that's urban migration. So for those of us who want to partner with God and who want to impact and shape the world and want to see God's kingdom come to earth, cities are a really good place to start. And so in this series, we've been asking ourselves the questions, what's God's vision for cities? And how can the city be redeemed? And how can we partner with God to become agents of redemption in the city? And over the past couple of weeks, we've been looking at different biblical cities and different redemptive shifts that God is bringing to cities today. And what do we mean by redemptive shifts? Well, we know that cities can pull us toward negative things. So things like individualism, things like idolatry, things like extraction. But God is also redeeming the city, and he's working with us, and he's shifting us towards life-giving things like community, like worship, and servanthood. So things that help make the city thrive. And today, we're going to be continuing this series by looking at the shift from slavery to freedom, and I'm going to be briefly talking about the city of Jerusalem. So the most famous story ever about the escape from slavery to freedom is found in the book of Exodus. And some people will be familiar with the story. I'll give you the 30-second version of it. So we know the Israelites were enslaved in Egypt for about 400 years. And Pharaoh, the leader of Egypt, he just won't let the people go. And God inflicts plagues on the Egyptians to help the Israelites escape. And before the final plague that breaks Pharaoh, God tells the Israelites to have a meal together. And this meal was going to celebrate and mark the freedom that God was going to give the Israelites back. And so the Israelites have this meal, and we know that this is the Passover, so this would become this annual freedom festival that Jewish families around the world still celebrate today. And after this meal, the next morning, Pharaoh wakes up and he's just had enough. And he tells the Israelites to get out. And so they begin their journey from slavery to freedom and to the promised land. And then I've got a little map here. And the blue line would have been their Exodus journey. You can see them starting from Egypt. There's obviously a few detours. but they eventually get to the promised land, and the capital city of the promised land would become Jerusalem. And it says in the book of Kings, we can get there, yeah, that this is a city where God dwelled, and God chose the city of Jerusalem to put his name there. And at the time, if the surrounding nations around Israel wanted to see what God was like, what they would do is they would travel to Jerusalem, because it was meant to be this epicenter of shalom. And it was meant to be this epicenter of God's peace, and that's what the name Jerusalem translates to, the city of peace. And so it was meant to be a city where God dwelled and where free people lived who had left slavery behind them. But we know that Jerusalem wasn't always this kind of city. Because if you look at its history, you'll see that this is a place where idols thrived. One example is the Israelites would eventually worship an idol called Moloch. So this is a Canaanite god. Their followers practiced child sacrifice. And this is a city that Jesus wept over. And Jerusalem was also a violent city. Again, if you look at its history, you'd see that it's been attacked 52 times. It's been captured and recaptured 44 times. It's been besieged 23 times, and it's been completely destroyed twice. So Jerusalem wasn't always this city of peace and freedom that it was meant to be. And 1,200 years after the Israelites began their Exodus journey from Egypt, Jesus is sitting in a room in the Promised Land in Jerusalem. And he's in this room with his 12 disciples, and it describes all of this in Luke chapter 22. And it's one of his last moments with the disciples before he's arrested and put on trial and eventually crucified. And he chooses to spend some of his last few moments with the disciples by hosting the Passover meal. So this freedom festival that their ancestors would have celebrated. And at this meal, Jesus does something a little bit different. And instead of looking back and celebrating what God had done to get the Israelites out of slavery, Jesus looks forwards and he starts talking about what he's going to do on the cross. And he's telling the disciples that something is going to happen. God was going to do something to lead them to freedom again. And he was going to do something that would allow the kingdom of God to become a reality in an entirely new way. And when I was reading this, I think if you take a step back, you know, out of all the ways that Jesus could have described what he was going to do on the cross, why does he choose the Passover meal? Why does he choose this freedom festival? Because if we think about it, he could have done a lot of different things. He could have performed a miracle. He could have gathered thousands of people together and told a story, as he often did. But why does he choose the Passover meal? Why does he choose this freedom festival? And N.T. Wright looks at this a little bit in his new book. It's called The Day the Revolution Began. And Wright says that as followers of Christ, we're all part of a royal priesthood. And there's passages throughout the Bible that describe God's people as priests. We've got one example up here from 1 Peter. And you know, if you're like me, when you think of the word priest, things pop into your head like religion and robes and old white men. So great images. But if you look at this a little bit, it actually makes a lot of sense, and it'll help us answer that question about Jesus and the Passover. Because we are royal. We're sons and daughters of God, and we're priests because we have authority. And we can see from the book of Genesis that God designed human beings to have responsibility and authority within and over creation. And he chose to make us his stewards in the world. And God chooses to act through us amazingly to move his plans forward for creation. But we know that humans turn this purpose upside down. And instead of stewarding things in creation to bring freedom and fullness of life around us, what we began to do is we began to worship things within creation. And we know the name for this is idolatry. And Pete spoke about this a few weeks ago. And some of the things that we bow down to or give our authority to are familiar. The obvious three, money, sex, and power. Some a little bit less obvious, so things like our egos, our image, success, things like comfort and safety. And we know that cities like London are places where all of these powers thrive. And Wright says that when we worship and serve things within creation, we hand over the power and authority that God gave us, that these powers were never meant to have, and they start to rule over us. And the problem with all of this is that all of these powers have one thing in common, and that is they are incredible servants and they're horrible masters. If we look at the example of money, and again, the city of London is a place where we've got incredible amounts of wealth all around us. It can be a life-giving thing when we steward it well. So it can help to create freedom. We can use it to provide for ourselves and others, open doors, create opportunity. We can be generous with it, and it can transform lives. But when it begins to rule over us, and when it starts to dictate how we think and how we act, and we start to make sacrifices to it, it becomes a horrible thing. And the result of idolatry is always just slavery and death, because God's plans can't go forward as he wants them to. And so when we think about all of this, Jesus chose the Passover meal, this freedom festival, to explain to his disciples what he was going to do on the cross, because he was going to come against the powers that had gained control, that were never meant to have authority over us, that had led to shame, to sin, to slavery, and finally death, and he was going to win. That's why he chooses this freedom festival to explain what he's going to do with the cross. And I really wanted to look at one example of this, and that is slavery to fear. When fear has authority over us that it was never meant to have. And because this is something that I've been thinking about and wrestling with over the last little bit, and I also think it's been a real theme around the world. If we look back at last year, we can see that there's violence in cities all across the world. And when the UN was asked to summarize year 2016, it called it a year of fear. And I often think when I'm on the tube in the morning, I'm on my way to work, and I've got my phone there, and I'm reading the news, I think there's actually a spiritual message underneath some of the headlines. It just whispers to us, you should be afraid, and you should be full of fear. And I personally think for Christians, a battle against fear is one of the biggest battles of our time. And the problem with fear is that it stops us from doing what God wants to do in partnership with us. It stops us from dreaming big. And this is probably why do not fear is the most frequent command found throughout the Bible. And we know that fear looks different in every single person's life, so we all battle with different types of fear. And I think we tend to battle with different types of fear at different stages of our life as well. But some of the big ones are fear of the unknown. There's fear of failure, fear of rejection or commitment, fear of death. I think however big or small, or whatever kinds of fear we're battling with, fear is fear, and it's something that we all face. For me personally, I work in the humanitarian sector, so I travel quite a bit for work, and often to places experiencing some kind of chaos. And for the last little bit, one of the fears that I've been battling with is the fear of flying. I was getting really, really anxious and nervous on flights. And you know, for a Canadian who's married to a Brit who lives in London, who's in my line of work, this is actually a really big problem. And I found it to be a really embarrassing problem. I never actually told any of my colleagues that I was struggling with this. And I'd never had a problem with flying before until a few years ago. I was on my first work trip after I got married, and I was going to Central African Republic. And I remember sitting on the plane before it took off, and I was just thinking about my life. You know, I just got married. I was enjoying living in London. I was enjoying KXC. And I had this thought, if this plane goes down, or if anything happens to be on this trip, it's all over. And I've just ruined Tom's life. So it's really not a helpful thought to think, and it's not a helpful thought to connect to flying, but I did. And I think looking back at this experience, this is when this fear started to take root, and it somehow became connected to flying. And I remember just feeling nervous on the entire flight. And the next trip, a few months later, I was even more nervous about the flight. And a few months later, I stopped sleeping properly before I would fly because I was so nervous about the trip and particularly the flight. And, you know, part of me would really like to stand up here and tell you that I was nervous because I was flying into situations of chaos, but that actually would be completely not true. I was that passenger on an EasyJet flight to Greece a few months ago for a vacation with, like, a grip of death on my armrest, making God all kinds of promises of things I'd do with my life if I happened to survive. Poor Tom sitting beside me trying to enjoy the pretzels in the movie. So like I said, it was a really embarrassing problem. And all this climax a few months ago, when my boss called me up and he told me that it was looking like our next deployment would be in Afghanistan. And then I found out that once we landed in Kabul on the east side of the country, I'd be taking a local airline to fly to the west. And I remember putting down the phone and I could physically feel fear starting to take a grip on me. And I started to ask questions like, should I even be in this line of work? Maybe I should just call it a day and get out. And I could feel fear starting to rob me of something that I had always felt God had called me into. And a few weeks before this trip, I was at New Wine, so Christian summer conference. And I did this thing that I sometimes do at Christian conferences. Maybe some of you have done it. I was getting kind of desperate, basically. But before every session, I would pray to God, and I would say, God, I'm open to anything that you have to do and teach me today. But I want this really specific prophetic word, and I want it from someone from the front, preferably with a microphone, and I want them to say, there's a lady here. Her name starts with an S. I think it's Sarah. God's got a message for you. You're about to go on a trip, and God's got a message, and this trip is going to go completely smooth. And then I said to God, your will be done. And the week went on at New Wine, and I didn't get any of these words, probably for the best. But God did speak to me in a different way. And I was listening to a talk, and you know how when someone says something, and the words just impact you at a deeper level, and you just know that was for you. And the speaker said, for those of you here waiting for a prophetic word to give you courage, stop being impressed by the size of your problems. God has already put words in your mouth. Speak them out. And it just hit me, and I knew that was for me. And so I went and I found this verse. It's from Isaiah 41:10. And it says, do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. And I memorized it. And I put it on a piece of paper. I started carrying it with me. I put it in my phone. And the weeks up to this trip felt like I was just in a constant battle with fear. But every time I felt particularly overwhelmed by this fear, I would speak this verse out over my fear, and it would change things. And just a little side note here. I didn't really memorize scripture for a really long time. It was something I kind of associated with Sunday school. And I think it's probably something that people in our generation don't really do that much. But it can be such a powerful thing to be able to speak God's truth throughout the day, wherever you are, as you start to encounter certain things, and particularly fear. So I'd highly recommend it. It's something I want to keep doing. If you fast forward a few weeks, I'm in Afghanistan. I'm about to board that local airline. At this point, I see that the airline's tagline is, "We have trustable wings." And I'm thinking, is trustable a real word? I did a quick Google. It definitely is. I hadn't heard it used a lot. Anxiety levels basically started cranking up a few notches. And we get handed our boarding passes. And the colleague that I'm traveling with, she can see that the name on her boarding pass, it's not her first name, it's not her last name, and it doesn't match her passport. And so she goes up to the guy behind the desk and she's saying, "You know, I don't think I'm going to be able to get on the plane with this ticket. You know, it doesn't match my passport." And the guy leans in and he's trying to comfort her. And he says, "Don't worry, they're not going to look at those anyways." And so my anxiety levels started cranking up a few more notches. And I got onto the plane incredibly nervous, no joke. I put my headphones in and started playing Karen's song, "Steady Me," from the KXC EP on repeat. But on this plane, in this place of fear, I felt God show me that I actually had a choice. I could choose to make an alliance with fear. I could choose to bow down to it. I could choose to give it authority. Or I could choose God's peace. Because Jesus has power and authority over all fear. And I remember just praying to God, "I choose your peace." And shortly after that, I actually fell asleep. And no, I didn't drug myself, for those of you wondering. I did think about it. But for me, that was actually a real miracle, because I've never been able to sleep on planes, and let alone that plane. And a few weeks later, after a ride back home in London, I was at KXC and we sang the song, "I'm No Longer a Slave to Fear." And as I was singing it, I just realized that something felt completely different. Some of the lyrics of the song go like this: "You split the sea so I could walk right through it. You drowned my fears in perfect love. I'm no longer a slave to fear, for I am a child of God." And I realized this is what it feels like to actually sing this song and believe the words that I'm singing. And this is what it feels like to sing this song with authority. And I think for so many of us, fear can enslave us. But it can also be an incredible thing, because it gives us the opportunity to experience courage. And we can't experience courage unless we experience fear first. And Jesus takes our weakness, he meets us in our weakness, and he transforms it. And for those of you here who are battling with fear tonight, maybe you feel completely enslaved to it, I want you to just picture yourself sitting across from Jesus at the Passover meal, and he's telling you, "I am going to fight for you. I'm going to take on the powers of the world that were never meant to have authority over you. I'm going to take fear head on, and I am going to win." And I think sometimes we just forget, I know I definitely do, that we're operating in a place of victory and freedom. Because Jesus won victory over everything at the cross, and so he gave us authority over fear. Pete mentioned a few weeks ago that London will be transformed by the free. So we need free people bring freedom to the city around us. And freedom means we're not being enslaved by anything that was never meant to have control over us. Instead, we're called to be priests. So stewarding whatever God has given us well, acting with courage, compassion, and partnering with God to move his plans forward for creation. And so I think some important questions to ask ourselves, and these are questions I've been asking myself this week, is what's God given you? What particular gifts? Is it a position of influence? Is it a job? Is it money? Is it the chance to study? And are you using the authority that God has given you to steward these things well? Or have they begun to master you? Does fear have authority over you that it was never meant to have? And is it stopping you from partnering with God with some of the things that he wants to do with you? I think today when we look around London and we look around King's Cross, we can see both the beautiful and the broken parts of this community and of the city. Today, when I was walking up from King's Cross Station up Pentonville Road, there's a horrible accident right on Pentonville Road. Maybe some of you saw it. And when we look around this community, we're just constantly reminded that we live between the now and the not yet. And the not yet meaning when heaven and earth becomes one and everything is redeemed. But we know that this not yet or this new creation is going to happen because Jesus broke the power of slavery at the cross. It didn't win. And he's going to finish what he started there. In the book of Revelation, and I'll end with this, John gets a glimpse of the earth when it's been fully redeemed by God. And John sees a city that's been fully restored, and the city is called the New Jerusalem. The last couple chapters of the Bible describe it. And I want to just end with a few verses from Revelation, because for those of us who are working to be agents of redemption in the city, it's a powerful glimpse of hope, because it shows us where we're going. It shows us the London we want to see. And John describes a city of completely free people. He describes New Jerusalem. This is what Jerusalem was always meant to be. And it's a city where, you know, people are not enslaved to anything. And so John writes this. It's from Revelation 21, 2-4. He says, "I saw the holy city, the New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away.'"